I regard myself as a soldier, though a soldier of peace.
I have a dream that one day
a soldier of peace,
this nation will rise up,
a soldier of peace,
live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream,
though a soldier of peace.
I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the power of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it.
Nonviolence Radio, covering the beat of nonviolence worldwide, from the Meta Center for Nonviolence in Petaluma, California. Nonviolence, to be sure, is much more than protests. That said, protests and anti-protests, rallies and anti-rallies have swept through the Bay Area in recent days and will be popping up in areas all around the country in the coming months. Some people question, how effective are protests really? But is that the right question? I don't think so. Protest has an important part to play in a well-articulated nonviolent strategy, but it's not the only tool in our toolbox either. Protests can help frame an issue and show mass support for a community or an idea. And it's a way of communicating to others with our bodies that we or they are not in this, whatever this may be, alone. Protests, however, are not intended as spaces for people with opposing viewpoints to really hear from or talk to one another. Often the police enforce barriers between protesters and anti-protesters in the hopes and intention of keeping people safe, but all it really does is to keep us separate and therefore unable to really invite one another into dialogue. And if we want to find a solution to our problems, we have to learn to talk with the people with opposing views, and most importantly, to listen to them, to hear them, just as we want to be heard. Enter Edwin Rutsch, the founding director of the Center for Building a Culture of Empathy. Rutsch created pop-up empathy tents to help people talk to each other in the midst of high tensions, to provide conflict resolution, violence de-escalation, mediation, and more. If you'd like to know more, you should definitely visit empathytent.org. So, a day before the San Francisco rallies, Rutsch brought together Joey Gibson of Patriot Prayer, the group that was being protested for coming to Chrissy Field, and Reverend Megan Rohr, a leader of counter-protests and an Episcopal minister at Grace Lutheran in San Francisco, for a conversation based in active listening and empathy, even though they disagree with one another politically. I'm your host of Nonviolence Radio and the director of the Meta Center for Nonviolence, Stephanie Van Hook, and I invite you to spend the next 30 minutes with us as we bear witness to the power of dialogue and empathy, and even loving your enemy.
So maybe you could each just to start with take, 30 seconds to just introduce yourself, add anything else that you would like to add about who you are and what you'd like to have known. Megan, perhaps like to start?
Sure. I'm pastor of Grace Lutheran in San Francisco. I'm also a volunteer chaplain with the San Francisco Police Department and a longtime advocate for the homeless in San Francisco, for the LGBTQ community and folk like that. And I'm a pastor in the Lutheran Church.
Great, thanks. Joey?
Yeah, my name is Joey Gibson. I run Patriot Prayer. Basically, trying to stay out of politics, trying to focus on free speech, freedom, love and peace, unity, trying to get moderates to kind of come together for a common purpose. We don't have to vote for the same person, but we can agree on certain things, like free speech and freedom, just finding ways to disagree, agree to disagree, it's because that's what it's about.
Okay, well, that's what we're trying to do with this empathy circle process. It's a structured process that has a few kind of this basic, agreements that we have, just so we can be sure to be sure everyone is heard. So we can just jump right into it, and I'll do a reflection of the first round. So our question here is, what concerns do you have about the upcoming rallies this Saturday? Or, talk about whatever you'd like to convey and share.
Well, a thing that would help me in order to move forward.
Okay.
If I can I just want to know what's the protest for? What are you protesting? Why are you protesting me?
Okay.
We're not protesting you at all.
Okay, let me reflect back. I'm going to reflect back into you if you heard. So what I'm hearing, Joey, is that you're really wondering from Meg is why she is protesting. And you're wondering what she's protesting for. So you'd like some clarity about what she's protesting for.
Yeah.
Is that right, Joey, or is there more?
No, that would help us move forward. So I know what her concerns are, why she wants to protest, you know, and what is it about me or Patriot Prayer that she's concerned about, that she wants to protest.
Okay, so what I'm hearing there is you really want to hear what her concerns are about Patriot's Prayer, and you just want to really hear those concerns. Is that right, or is there more? Megan, would you like to share? And I'll reflect back just to model how we do this.
Sure. I think the easiest thing to say is it's not about you at all, Joey. Our rally is uniting against white nationalists. I know that that's not who you are or who you identify as, and so it's probably not a rally that's against you. And even if that was your identity, not be about you. So here's a picture of some people that it is about. This is Ava and Kurt and Magda. They're three people who went to Auschwitz. Two died and one lived. They are my wife's family. It's also about my two kids, who are both Black and going to school in San Francisco, and my own self. I am a transgender individual. We have experienced generations of hate and discrimination tangled up so often and so much that the PTSD of these issues is very fresh and very raw. And
okay, can I just reflect back what I'm hearing? If it becomes too much, it's hard to remember. So I'm hearing what I'm hearing you say is it's not even about Joey and his rally. That you're aware that his rally isn't a white supremacist.
I'm aware that that he doesn't identify that way, mm-hmm.
You're aware that he's not identifying that way, so it's not even about his rally. And what you are demonstrating against is white supremacy, and you're laying out people who it's really for. It's for yourself as a transgender person. It's a care about your children, as well as,
my wife and her family who have died.
So you have a wife and family who died in Auschwitz. So it's really it's about demonstrating about that.
Yeah, and it's about celebrating the full diversity of San Francisco. We just, within the last 2 weeks, experienced domestic terrorism. Are being driven into a rally. And I know that you also don't identify as someone who supports violence. But given the proximity with this rally, the fact that you were going to be nearby, and people who look and dress like those who are at the rally in Charlottesville are going to be at this event, it gave us an opportunity to express our opposition against white nationalism, even if that's not how you all identify. So it's more about our mourning publicly than being against you specifically.
So I'm hearing that this is a public mourning about what happened in Charlottesville, and you realize that Joey wasn't involved in that, and this is just a chance for you to have that public mourning.
Yeah, and what is really hard is when there is moral ambiguity about white nationalism or moral ambiguity about white supremacy or anti-Semitism, transphobia, issues of racial diversity. We want to make sure that as San Franciscans, as faith leaders, that we are not being ambiguous at all, that we are standing firmly against white supremacy and against hate speech and against violence. And we want to make sure it's not ambiguous what hate is.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is you want a real unambiguous distinction between what hate speech is and what it's not, and that's what you're trying to convey, is what that clarity of that difference is.
Yes.
Is there more? Do you feel heard?
Well, the other thing that I wanted to say is I know specifically from having listened to some of Joey's talks on YouTube that a part of the adrenaline and the excitement of knowing that there might be violence, even when words happen that say we're opposed to violence, but then the video of the rally shows fires and it shows people fighting each other. It's really unclear if the words match the actions and the visuals of the movement. And so my hope is that if it's true that Joey is against violence and is against white nationalism, that Joey would also join me in being committed to no longer being ambiguous about it.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing an ambiguity between violence and nonviolence. And for example, in the videos that Joey is doing, you're seeing that he's talking about nonviolence, but there's sort of a violent quality to the videos. And that was the 5 minutes. Joey?
Yeah, I guess, that's a legitimate point on the video. So we make sure, like, you know, we're pretty hated by Antifa, which is a hate group, and they use violence and threats all the time against us. And so we always make sure we highlight the violence that they, when they come in and they commit violence against us, we highlight that. And I think that people have talked to me about that, like the music I use and stuff like that. Like, it sounds like it just, it looks like we're glorifying it. So I understand that concern. Basically, it's important that we show that it's happening, though, because mainstream media won't show it. And I need help. I need people on the left, moderates, socialists, whoever they may be. If they believe in peace, then they need to disavow Antifa.
Okay. Would you like to reflect that, or would you like me to do it? Okay.
I think Joey has heard this feedback before, that violent imagery and music maybe doesn't fulfill the fullness of what he wants to convey, but he also wants people to renounce Antifa.
Is that it? Is there more?
That's a real concern of mine, because just like how Megan wants me to be very clear about white nationalism, white supremacy, and Nazis, and I have spoke out against them, and I will continue to do it, but I would kind of hope that it's fair to ask for the left to kind of do the same thing. You know what I mean? There's extremists on both sides who are tearing apart this country, and I will stand with anybody. I don't care who they, I don't care if they're gay, straight, black, white, brown, whatever. I will stand with anybody who's a good person and will speak out against these extremists on both sides.
Were you hearing, Megan?
I heard that you are willing to stand with people who are willing to renounce extremists.
Yeah, I don't, and you know, Megan, I didn't hear you say anything that I disagree with about. Like, everything that you said, that you, how you want to be there, what you believe in, what you stand for, there's no reason why that would conflict with what I'm trying to do, with what I believe. In no way.
Do you want me to reflect?
Yeah, please reflect till he feels heard. Yeah, just reflect the question, everything you heard. Yeah.
I heard you say that the words that I'm using resonate with you, and you want to know why maybe we couldn't be at the same gathering.
Yeah.
Shall I answer that? So I did also, because I listened to a lot of your words, and I did notice that we might preach the exact same sermon on a Sunday if we were in different congregations. And as a Lutheran celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, I know that Lutherans have contributed to white supremacy in the past, and some of Luther's language has been used to encourage Nazis, the 1940s kind. And so I have taken actions to repent from my own ways that I am entangled in that, and in the ways that Christianity and the Bible can be used both to love and support and name and claim the people I will support my whole life speaking out against.
You want to reflect back your understanding of what you heard Megan say, Joey?
Well, I understand what she's saying in terms of how Christianity has been used just like every religion has been. So I'm assuming she's making the connection. That's her concern with me.
No.
Maybe she's saying that my words is a way that can be used to brainwash people.
Nope.
But I don't think that
she's saying that wasn't what she said.
You and like that's legitimate, but I don't think that
Joey?
I think man has perverted the words of the New Testament.
Okay. So Megan was saying you didn't understand her, so she's gonna say it again until she feels really heard and understood. So would you reflect that again?
I wasn't actually trying to imply anything. I was just saying the first half of my sentence so I can see how you might have been reading.
Maybe say it in a smaller piece.
I was saying that I was struck as I watched your videos that the words that you were using at most of your rallies were the same words that I might preach in my congregation, and that I have done a lot of work to acknowledge the ways in which the Lutheran Church in particular has participated in anti-Semitism in the past. And then I was going to say the next part.
Let's let him reflect that first, just a piece. But so what did you hear Megan say, Joey?
Okay, I see. So she's saying that there's a lot of similarities and some of the stuff that we would say, like when we preach. So there's a lot of similarities. She's going to talk about self-reflection that she's had to do in terms of things like the history of the Lutheran Church and their discrimination towards certain cultures or races.
Yes. What I think is the difference is who we're preaching to and how we're preaching to them. And I went through some of your speakers lists, and there was a lot of folk who either are internet famous for having assaulted people at rallies, whether it's in defense or self-defense, can be figured out by courts. There were some people who were talking about how they know people come to the rallies in order to fight each other. And there was a lot of language about being like a soldier of God and being ready to fight. And so I'll stop there. Yeah. So it's a small enough chunk.
Yeah. So I see there's sheer concern about people borderline going to that thing where they're going to use God as a justification as soldiers to discriminate, you know, or to hurt other people kind of thing. Is that what you're saying? Is that your concern?
Sort of. I was just noting that from the speakers list, there are people who have actively engaged in violence, whether it's defense or self-defense is not for me to judge. And that some of the speakers were talking about that they know the reason that participants in the rally show up with their bodies is because they are interested in getting in a fight, and that some of the language is about being a soldier, like a soldier for God.
Yeah, that's realistic.
What were you hearing her say?
That's a realistic description. I mean, that is true. There is people that show up that want to fight. There is people that feel like we're at a war right now. That's definitely 100% true.
Right.
Did you feel that he got it, what you were saying?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Close enough. I mean, when I preach, get off your butts and do something in the world, don't be afraid, get things done, to a group of people who are going to now go out and feed the homeless. And I actually compliment you because I know you guys do that a lot. You go out and feed the homeless, and I think that's fantastic. When I'm doing it to help people get off their butts and help the moral universe arc towards justice, it feels like a different sermon than when you're preaching it to someone who brought weapons with them to a rally and came there excited to get into conflict, and you used images about riots and protests, and the only examples of racism you used were about white people feeling uncomfortable about black people confronting them. And so if there were more examples that were explicitly about denouncing anti-Semitism, that were about denouncing hatred of immigrants just because of their skin color or where they come from, or was denouncing treating people differently because of their skin color, that might be a different thing. But it's all I have to judge from is what I can see from your... Joey, I know you to be authentically and consistently preaching that love is more important than hate. And you also consistently speak that you are not a fan of violence because it disrespects people rather than allowing people to hear the conversations that are happening at your rally.
Yeah.
Is that it? Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but what I'm trying to say is I really am, my goal right now is to really bring people together. And there's so many things that are splitting us up. I know a lot of people are concerned about race, and that's okay. That's legitimate. That is a real issue. You know, I mean, slavery just existed, you know, not too long ago. So that's a real concern. I get that. And there's a lot of people out there who dedicated their whole lives to fight racism. That's good. That's great. We need those people. For me though, my main concern is to stand against hate, all forms of hate. We have it all over the place. And too many people get sidetracked with racism. I don't mean that in a bad way. But what about hate in general? You know what I mean? Like, I don't see too many people get mad when protesters show up and spew out tons of hate. You know what I mean? That's my concern. That's what I'm focused on right now.
So I hear you saying that your focus is to try to unite people so that people who are against hate could all maybe be at the same rally and have a healthy dialogue?
Yeah. That's why I don't do, I'm not being political anymore, because it's too divisive. I don't want to tell people who to vote for anymore. That's to me, we have way bigger issues, and it's cultural. And, you know, I don't care, you know, I'm the more liberals that are socialists that I'm getting closer to, that I learn from, I understand that a lot of us kind of believe in the same things. If you're a good person, that is, you know what I mean? We got to go against the people who are lying, who are deceptive, who are trying to tear apart this country. The people at the top, the establishment, you know, that's what I want to focus on.
So I hear you saying that you want to focus on the things that unite us, the people you want to speak the truth about the people who are lying, and you want to help people understand that their differences maybe aren't as different as sticks and clubs might make people think they are.
Absolutely.
Is there more? You still got a minute and a half?
No.
Okay. Details heard.
Yeah. So I sincerely give you the benefit of the doubt that everything you are saying is true. And I have our counter rally is at the Civic Center and far enough away so that folk who might be coming there to try to be violent and hateful on the liberal side are given other alternatives and shown that there's another option. I hope that I'm helping you work. I hope I'm giving you an opportunity to step off of federal land where guns could be carried and come to our rally that truly is a place that is trying to say that violence can't be tolerated.
I didn't hear the last part. I didn't hear the last part about the guns.
Oh, I wanted to say that our event at Crizzy Field is far enough away from your space that we're able to encourage people not to be violent with each other. And that if you wanted to, you could come off of federal property where guns are allowed and come onto San Francisco property where they're not allowed and be a part of a conversation without weapons.
Can you just reflect back what she was saying and then
So
her satisfaction?
Megan feels unsafe, and I understand that. She feels unsafe. The fact it would be nice to be able to go on property where she knows that it's illegal to carry a weapon.
My issue isn't safety at all. I actually am trying to prevent unproductive conflict. And I'm, as a nonviolent protester, I follow Gandhi. It's part of why I'm in this conversation. There's the two hands of nonviolence, where you recognize the truth of someone else and say no to injustice and hate that's happening. And I'm mostly, more importantly, saying that I can give you the benefit of the doubt that you don't want violence by inviting you to move off of land that allows weapons to be there.
Okay, I guess I'm just confused. Is it like if I truly was nonviolent, you think it sends a better message to be on city land?
So what I'm saying is by having symbols and visuals that allow people who take on the conflict and the white supremacy that you disavow, like for example, the snake on your t-shirt has been used at times in ways that have been deemed as hate speech by the EEOC, and some of the symbols of your communication are confusing. The location of having a space where there are guns, the visuals of riots and fire are very confusing. And then some of the conversations that you had, like at the university you were at not too long ago, saying that these rallies are intentionally creating publicity in a way that allows young people to Google what's going on and feel like they can be recruited to political ideas makes me feel like maybe what your heart intention is and what is being conveyed to the general world doesn't match up.
Oh, okay. The whole guns thing kind of threw me off there. Okay. So you're saying that, yeah, I'm saying you want to give me the benefit of the doubt, but you're saying that you like my words, but you're concerned that about how sincere they are because of imagery and because of, you know, like I'm going on a federal park, which does allow guns and stuff like that. Okay.
It's less about questioning your motives and inviting you to get rid of the ambiguity that makes it possible to fuel the hate that you disavow.
Okay. Can I tell you why I go to the federal parks?
Would you just reflect that last part? Then I think it's your turn after that last piece.
No, didn't I already say?
Do you feel heard, Megan? Did you feel heard?
Yeah,
She feels heard. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Just to clear it up, the reason why we choose federal land when we can and some of these very politically active areas like San Francisco, Portland and stuff is because there's more consistency in terms of there's not as much politics. So the local police are used by the politicians. They're used and abused. And so it becomes a political thing. So we don't know what to expect when we go on to city land, because especially, and Megan, you have to understand, or I hope you understand how much Antifa plays into all of this, this whole conversation, even everything we're talking about. That's the biggest challenge I have in terms of being nonviolent, in terms of You know, that's why we choose the federal land, because we know that mayors use Antifa with police. Police will stand down. The mayor, like Berkeley, it's the same thing. And so just so you know, it's hard. It's a fine balance. You know, it's the whole thing between self-defense or being violent. You know, it's difficult because of Antifa. I mean, if Antifa wasn't here, if they weren't involved, there wouldn't be nearly as many problems. We'd be able to have these awesome rallies with all these people in it. There would be no violence. I wouldn't have to post videos of them fighting and the riots and stuff.
Yeah, so I hear you saying that you understand the conflict, but you feel like you can't live up to the nonviolence that you would like to because Antifa attacks you at protests, and you pick federal property because the rules are more consistent from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Yeah, except it's not that I can't live up to it. It's that it's my biggest challenge right now. That's my biggest struggle right now. I literally need to find, and I'm working on it, but I literally need to find enough men who are going to be on the front lines with their hands up and won't fight back. That's the only solution. That's the only way we will be able to be Antifa in terms of getting the community to finally turn on them.
Yeah, I hear you saying that you need enough people who can stand with you, who are as committed to nonviolence as you, in order to maintain it.
Yeah.
Is there more?
No, I just, I hate to cut this short. My phone's about to die and I got to get back inside. But I really hope that in the future, Megan, if people can get more comfortable, and I need to do a better job, I understand that. But in the future, it's like, I want people like you. I want leaders like you to be speaking at these rallies. I want your people to be coming into these rallies. You know what I mean? I want these rallies to be extremely diverse. And like I said, that's why I'm getting away from the politics.
I hear that. And I thank you for that, and I affirm the words that you use, and that's not something that could be possible until it's less ambiguous, what you're inviting and what you're fueling. And so I thank you for at least holding people accountable when you can and trying to encourage all people, regardless of where they stand, to love each other's in their hearts.
Okay.
Yeah. And I want to thank both of you for taking part in this empathy circle. As I mentioned, we've been to these different rallies. We set up the empathy tent. We'll be there on the 26th with the empathy tent. Anyone can come, be heard. We can also facilitate these dialogues. And I hope we can continue this dialogue going forth with yourselves and other people. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Edwin. Enjoy.
Thanks, guys.
There is an indefinable, mysterious power that pervades everything. It transcends the senses, while everything around me is ever changing, ever dying. There is a living power that is changeless, that holds all together, that creates, dissolves, and recreates. सबको सम्मति दे भगवान ईश्वर अल्लाह तेरो नाम सबको सम्मति दे भगवान ईश्वर अल्लाह तेरो नाम.
You're listening to Nonviolence Radio, and we're going to turn now to some nonviolence in the news.
Greetings, everyone. It's time for some nonviolence news. As we like to say, news events that you won't get in the mainstream media and analysis that you will get hardly anywhere. We're going to try something a little bit different today, and that is that Stephanie and I are going to share items back and forth in a non-competitive spirit.
Well, competition to make each other a little bit better.
That's
so
it.
What have you got, Michael?
Competition to excel.
That's right.
So we also are going to try to highlight where these events and other items fit into the three circles of the roadmap.
Ooh, you're upping the challenge right now. Okay.
Yep. All right. Hope you can catch up.
Let's go.
The three circles of the roadmap representing three stages of any successful movement are personal development, constructive program, and direct action, or satyagraha.
Okay.
But we're also going to stick with our categories of resources, news, and events. And so I'd like to mention one resource to start us off, very appropriately named Positive News. It's both a magazine and a website, www.positive.news, offering, no surprise, positive news in many categories. Most of these categories are not directly related to nonviolence, but all of them, especially cumulatively, especially if they form a habit of news listening, are changing the mindset, which is very important in adjusting our culture. Just to cite one item that they have right now, because one of Stephanie's items will be appropriate here. It's about a gangsta gardener, a Los Angeles-based leader, Ron Finley, who believes masculinity is about building thriving communities and being a conscious citizen of the planet.
So that must be an example of person power. Is that right?
Quite right.
Okay. All right, so I have a resource. Claiborne Carson, director of the MLK Junior Center at Stanford University, one of the world's foremost scholars on Dr. King and trustee of Dr. King's papers, spoke at Ebenezer Baptist Church, a noted place where King used to preach, on the life of Martin Luther King in front of C-SPAN cameras. The talk covers Martin Luther King Jr.'s early life, why he decided to become a reverend, and how that contributed to his work in the civil rights movement. It's just an hour long, and you can find it at C-SPAN. I'd say that is constructive program, telling a different kind of story about history.
Yeah, interesting, Stephanie. I think a lot of these resources are constructive program for the people who do it, but are individually person power. So the next one I want to mention is an exciting first offering of its kind coming from Nonviolent Peace Force, an organization that we strongly support. And this is an online course called Strengthening Civilian Capacity to Protect Civilians. And if anybody knows how to do that, it's Nonviolent Peace Force. They're offering this course through Merrimack College, and it begins on 9/18, September 18th, but registration will be closing appropriately on 9/11.
So what is that in your circles, Michael?
As I say, I think it's constructive program on the part of Nonviolent Peace Force, mm-hmm. and person power on the part of the students.
Okay, all right, you got one. So I want to say that nonviolence extends to all of life. It's not just about human beings, and it's about our relationship to the whole of life, to nature, everybody. So you can learn how to help animals and humane workers affected by Hurricane Harvey in Houston by visiting dodo.com/relief, and I would call that constructive program. Michael.
I would also, and the next one is definitely person power, and it's from ICNC, the mm-hmm. International Center on Nonviolent Conflict. They have a website, which we've often cited, called Minds of the Movement, and they have a great article up just now on mindful activism. It's called The Power of Mindfulness in the Streets, and I'm happy to say that the picture on the masthead focuses on Sarah Thompson, whom we interviewed just a while back. The background here is that decades after Thich Nhat Hanh, the famous Vietnamese Buddhist monk, founded the concept of engaged Buddhism. Now, Thich Nhat Hanh, or Thay as they call him, who is now 91 years old and he's going to visit his hometown in Hue, he was asked one time, what is engaged Buddhism? And he answered, why, it's Buddhism. You can't be a Buddhist and not be engaged in the sufferings of others. Now, that's interesting in particular with regard to the new entry of Buddhists in South Korea. Most of the scientific studies of of mindfulness have focused almost entirely on the benefits to individual well-being. The applications of mindfulness to activism have been limited to preventing stress and burnout, which heaven knows is important. But there's also direct impacts on the social fabric, which you will find in this article and also in the new development called Mindful Schools, which is spreading. And that is, scientists now use the term subtle energy, and Gandhi and King firmly believed in it. You just heard Mahatma Gandhi, talking about a living power that pervades the universe. When we practice mindfulness or meditation, we are not only absorbing that power in ourselves, but putting it out into the world.
Nonviolent scholar, resistance studies scholar Stellan Vinthagen, a friend of the Meta Center as well, has an important book, The Theory of Nonviolent Action, and that book will soon be available in German. I call that constructive program, again, telling a new story about who we are and actually making the resources for it. And there is an important conversation activists need to have about ableism and our language. For example, do we say that we, quote, stand for justice or rise against fascism? And can we see that these metaphors that imply standing or make it seem that standing or rising is then a good thing and it makes you a good person to stand or rise? So we need to have a conversation about that. So one resource that I think that could be very useful that I found is by Everyday Feminism, a blog on feminism. It's a 2014 piece. It's called 10 Questions Why Ableist Language Matters Answered. So check that one out.
Very good. I'm not exactly sure how to classify this next one, Stephanie. Monitoring indigenous peoples' rights around the world may have just gotten a bit easier because there's a new tool now called Indigenous Navigator. It's an interactive watchdog that allows you to keep track of the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and outcomes of, for example, the World Conference on Indigenous People and key elements of the Sustainable Development Goals, which I heard a lot about 2 years ago at the UN. So, for example, the Navigator was tested in Nepal. Women learned that they had the right to participate in decision-making, which they had not known. Empowered with this knowledge, they approached local officials and got to exercise their rights. In certain municipalities in Nepal, there are actually funds now that are meant for women, but they didn't know about them. So claiming those funds enables them to go forward. I guess I'm going to say this one is constructive program.
Thank you, Michael. Over to me. Listeners ought to know about the awesome resource, the Swarthmore College Peace Collection, and we've had the curator of that collection on Nonviolence Radio in the past. So they teamed up with someone called Quote Investigator. This is a site that investigates the origins of quotes, and they looked into a popular quote attributed to Mahatma Gandhi, which is, "First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win," to see if Gandhi really said it. And their conclusion, the quote did not originate with Gandhi, but with a large family of sayings from the early 19th century. And you can see the full article at quoteinvestigator.com/2017/08/13/stages and connect with the Swarthmore College Peace Collection at swarthmore.edu/library/peace. I would call that constructive program.
Not bad. I think I would call the next one direct action because I'm moving over to the news segment now, and this may be our first example of direct action today.
Oh, wait, before you get to the news, let me share a couple more resources that I have then so we can stick together here, Michael.
Okay, Stephanie, do your resources and then on to the news.
Very good. The Institute for Humane Education has created a support page at generosity.com. So look for the Institute for Humane Education to bring support for their program for creating much needed resources for, quote, solutionaries in education. What is a solutionary? Might be you. According to IHE, the Institute for Humane Education, a solutionary is a person who identifies problems and their underlying systems and then develops solutions that are humane, just, and sustainable for all people, animals, and the environment. I call this both person power and constructive program at a nice intersection between the two. Zen Hospice is offering classes in mindful caregiving. I think this is an important aspect of nonviolence because death can be a period of gentle transition or of pain and conflict, right? So we can have nonviolent dying periods, right? And so we can support those around us transitioning out of this life with the tools and skills of our deep inner practice of nonviolence. And we need to have much more of a look at the end of life in our society, don't we? So you can find more information at zenhospice.org/education-training/MCE or just go to zenhospice.org. And over to you now, Michael, for some of the nonviolence news.
You bet, Stephanie. And this first, I'd like to mention two domestic actions that have taken place recently. In Durham, North Carolina residents turned out en masse to counter white supremacists, which isn't unusual in itself, but this time they had monitors with orange vests. So I want to call that proto-peace teams. And peace teams are a very important innovation that's not only enabling rallies and marches to stay nonviolent, but showing that there are nonviolent ways to actually counter severe violence. And just on a local note, in Petaluma, I may have mentioned that there's a poultry plant and three animal rights activists were arrested there this week. And it's a development that I welcome not only because of what you just said, Stephanie, about animals, but because often in the animal rights movement, the style has not been one of nonviolence. But it looks as though people are moving over to that way of being, which means that their methodology and their ideology are going to resonate. They're going to be consistent, and that'll be more powerful direct action.
For those of you just tuning in, this is Nonviolence Radio, and you're getting all the news that you're not going to hear in the mainstream media. So in other nonviolent news, a pilot of a Turkish Airlines flight from Heathrow to Afghanistan refused to take off because he learned that there was a man who applied for asylum in England for fear that he would be killed in Afghanistan being forcefully deported. So the pilot wouldn't take off. The flight was delayed for 45 minutes, and it only took off after Samim Bigzad, a 22-year-old man, was removed from the flight. And this is an action of non-cooperation. It was supported by a number of activists pleading the case for Bigzad to remain in the country.
Here's an organization that I did not know about. It was founded back in July of 2014, and they've gotten active recently. It's called the Pan-African Conference on Nonviolence. It was started in Cape Town, South Africa. They have delegates from 34 African countries and over 50 countries from every continent that helped give birth to this. And basically what you'll find is a tremendously big, very extensive blog site. So this, again, is a great example of constructive program.
And in other constructive program nonviolence news, on August 31st, 2017, the city of Los Angeles officially replaced October 9th, which was Columbus Day, with Indigenous Peoples Day. Similar resolutions have been passed in Denver and Seattle, and this is an expansion of the work to reconsider the celebration of our violent history in the United States and work towards some semblance of cultural reparations.
Three related items as we move around the world. In front of Berlin's Brandenburg Gate recently, and coming up in addition on September 1st, which is actually today, this is happening as we speak if you're listening live, 4 to 6 p.m. in Germany, so it's probably over by now. And it's a coalition of many peace and environmental groups, and I am very happy to hear that because often these two issues are not carried out in a coordinated manner. And these are two powerful communities who are much more powerful together than they are separately. And so they're going to commemorate, or have just commemorated, the beginning of World War II, 78 years ago today. In a related development, on the occasion of the 72nd anniversary of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the 2017 World Conference Against A&H Bombs called on the peoples of the world to launch international simultaneous actions to create what they're calling a peace wave. Interesting concept. And they note, among the 193 member states of the United Nations, only 9 countries are in possession of nuclear weapons. And if they were to be persuaded, it would be possible to achieve a nuclear weapon-free world within the lifetime of the Hibakusha, the people who suffered in those bombings. One more related, if I may, Stephanie. This is my favorite item for today. 6,000 very clever, well-trained protesters managed to gum up a coal production company in Germany, just to the west of Cologne. Or Köln, as it's called in German. So this is one of the most polluting sites on the planet in a country which has invested massively in wind energy and alternative energy. And These 6,000 people were very well organized. They divided up into 10 fingers, as they called it, and carried out all kinds of clever actions, including making a human pyramid to block the police from detaining some of their friends. And they said, we need to work towards a just transition, and we need to do it now. These people are putting their bodies on the line for that. They carried out strategic civil disobedience, so we're definitely talking about circle number 3, direct action here. And the name of this campaign, Ende Gelände, which literally means land's end, but is a German idiom meaning, I guess I would translate it, the party's over, which is the title of Robert Heinberg's book on the end of fossil fuels.
In other news, upholding the goodness of the world community, and in spite of the U.S. president's threats to build a wall to separate the two countries, Mexico is reaching out with supplies and aid to help victims of the Houston flooding. And we call this an example of integrative power, where you're not using threats, you're not using economic exchange. What you're doing is you're reinforcing the goodness of your own being as a human being and saying that when I do this, it's going to draw us closer. So thank you very much to Mexico. In New Orleans, Democratic Socialists are putting their ideals into action by offering free brake light repair on August 26th, which already passed, and September 16th. They point out that police often pull over people of color and immigrants for broken brake lights, and that can lead to police violence as well as deportation. So this is an important piece of constructive program. Finally, the New York Times reported a major breakthrough for the Zapatista movement. They've renounced their identity as a violence-identified group because they feel that there's already too much violence around them in Mexico. So they want to take on nonviolence and otherwise legal structures. And this is really important news, but the problem is the way that the Times reports on it. The journalists suggest that this means that they are no longer, quote, revolutionary. But what is more revolutionary than renouncing violence? So I'm going to say this is a matter of, well, the Zapatista movement, this is very much a constrictive program in a lot of ways. But so I'm going to vote for person power on this one.
Not bad. I want to add a personal note. Some 20 years ago, I was part of a meeting, and Subcomandante Marcos sent a representative to us. We were starting the plans for what became Nonviolent Peace Force right down here in Santa Cruz. And his message is something I will never forget. He, at that point, they were carrying out armed struggle in the jungles of Lacandon. And the message that he sent to us was, show us another way, and we will take it. It just goes to show you that often people engaged in violence do not want to be, but they don't know of an alternative. Hence, the importance of the work of the Meta Center and other organizations that promote nonviolence education.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael. Any more news on your end? Because I have some more on mine.
One brief item. The UN Office of Disarmament Affairs has now put online something that they call a signing kit, which is to help you enroll your government to sign and ratify the new treaty to ban the bomb. You can try that in this country. I don't think it's going to, quote, work, unquote, but it will be helpful. And they ask that you let them know what's working in your country in this historical effort.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very long website, but you might be able to reach it through abolition2000.org.
Thank you, Michael Nigler. So this is kind of like news because Nathan Schneider is a co-founder of Waging Nonviolence, or else I'm just trying to insert this into the news because I really wanted to talk about it. Nathan Schneider, he wrote a fascinating article for American Magazine, which you can find at americanmagazine.org, which is called A Case Against Constant Provocation. His case is that we're addicted to provocation, one titillating issue after another, and it's keeping us from being united. But not getting provoked mean you don't care? No. Here's a highlight. A rushed reaction to a provocation, whether by a tweet or by mass mobilization, will not reverse the human condition. So we may as well expect to be in this struggle for life. If we are in it for life, we need time to rest, to breathe, and to worship. And my favorite is, a people who are hard to provoke are a people harder to rule. So I'd say that is part of some information that could help us build up any of those wedges of the circles on the roadmap. But here's something else. Can board games make us nicer people?
According to one journalist, Annalise Griffin, board games can be a solution to part of the political division taking place in our country and our world today because, as she says, a good board game builds in enough chance so that any reasonably skilled player can win. Even in chess, famously associated with warfare and military strategy, the emphasis is not on who ultimately wins, but on the ingenuity the players display in the process. And in all of these ways, board games release players, however temporarily, from the maxim that life is divided into clear, consistent categories of winners and losers, and that there is a moral logic as to who falls into which category. And she goes on to say, another significant feature of board games is that they require several people to sit down in the same room together and concentrate on a shared experience in real time. And that's becoming increasingly rare in a world in which we often see our friends and loved ones more on social media than in real life. And part of our roadmap says to personalize our relationships. So this is an opportunity to get some friends together and experience and experiment on that one. Michael.
Stephanie, I would say that if you're making yourself unprovocable, which is something that was highly recommended, that's definitely person power, definitely personal empowerment.
What about some events taking place, Michael? We have a few more minutes.
Okay. Here's the biggest event in the area. Good. If you go to Petaluma these days, starting today, and look in the main storefront window of Copperfields, you will see a display by the Meta Center with some of our books and some wonderful posters that Stephanie has gotten created.
It's a fascinating display. And International Day of Peace is on its way. That's September 21st. And just around that time, we're having an event, Justice for the Petaluma Community, Community Conversation, September 18th at Aquas Cafe. This is a community conversation about restorative justice and getting restorative justice into our schools. You can find out more at MetaCenter, that's metawith2ts.org/events. And finally, we have a Nonviolence News Hope Tank every Wednesday morning from 8:15 a.m. for an hour. And we explore the latest and greatest nonviolence in the news, a collaboration with Waging Nonviolence. And again, visit metacenter.org/events for more information and to sign up for the calls. Michael Negler, last pieces of information that you'd like to share.
Right. Also on that same occasion, right after the International Day of Peace, the No War organization of David Swanson is putting on something called No War 2016. That doesn't look right. Real Security Without Terrorism. It's a huge event that is going to include Medea Benjamin and Tim DeChristopher of environmental fame, and just a long, long list of wonderful people. And it will be at the American University Katzen Art Center in Massachusetts. Music by the Earthlings duo, Sharon Abreu and Michael Hurwitz, who have also played for the Meta Center at Aquas Cafe to great acclaim. Stephanie, that kind of wraps it up now today. Not that that's all the news that's going on. It's all that we had time to report on.
Very good. Thank you so much, Michael Negler. And this nonviolence news, you can find it up at themetacenter.org after the show if you'd like to read it and share that out. And so it's been a great show, everybody. We really appreciate Edwin Rutsch allowing us to use that conversation from his empathy circle. And we want to thank KWMR, our mother station, to you, all of our listeners, to the staff and volunteers at the Meta Center for Nonviolence, and to everybody out there. Let's take care of one another. Thanks.